Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Susan. How are you today?
I'm really great. I'm so glad that you could be here with us. And we're here, everyone, to talk about copyright. And we're here with Kathleen Davis. And we're going to get into some really interesting aspects of copyright and question, hopefully answer a lot of your questions. And I think maybe we have a quick tech talk from Brandon first. Is that right? Hello, Brandon.
Hello. So I just wanted to remind everyone, if you do have a question for Kathy or Susan, if you would just please raise your hand, that way we can work the question out all together and then people in the future have a chance to review it. Other than that, if you have any technical issues, the Q&A box is in the bottom center of your screen. You can always just message me and I'll be glad to help you there. Other
I
than
have a
that,
question, Brandon. On my screen, I see your name and Cheryl's name, big boxes. Is that just my settings, my
That
view?
would be in the the view in the top right corner where it
Okay.
says
Either
your name.
way. No, either way, I still see that. Do you see that, Kathy?
I do. I see the gray boxes.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if everyone else sees that or not, but
Not seeing that at all. Cheryl, do you see that?
What are we seeing? Sorry.
your name in the big box.
No, I am watching it on the Facebook page, and I am seeing a gallery view of Brandon, Susan, and Kathy.
Okay,
I'm
awesome.
not seeing
I'm
any
seeing.
boxes, so yep, I think you're good.
Okay.
Susan and Kathy, it might be in the top corner, and this is for everyone else also. There's a view. You can switch between speaker view and let's see, gallery view.
Yeah, I see it either way though, but it's maybe it's just me.
That's weird.
Maybe, oh. Does
We'll
that
hear.
show non-video participants or not show non-video participants
Yeah,
thing at
that's
the top underneath the.
Where do you see that?
In the top center.
Where it says total non-video participants, when you might see Cheryl is talking. I have it set differently, so it says show non-video participants. Anyhow, as long as you're good, Susan, I think you're good to go. It's looking good on the Facebook page, so.
Sounds good. All
So
right.
please raise your hand, guys, if you have any questions, and Q&A box if you need tech help. Other than that, you guys should be good to go, Susan and Kathy.
Guys, thanks so much. So, Kathleen, do you work with artists all the time?
I work with a lot of artists and a lot of creative people. I'll give you a little bit of my background as we get started. I've been practicing law since 2001. I went to Indiana University School of Law in Indianapolis, and I'm actually licensed in Indiana, Georgia, as well as Florida and Ohio, and before the federal courts. And I've owned my own practice since 2012, which is very much when I started working more with artists because that was more of a passion of mine.
Oh,
And
nice.
since then, I've
And we're looking at that beautiful original art behind you, which you were telling me about earlier.
Yes, thank you. Thank
Beautiful. You might get questions about
I wish I had the actual artist with me so he could answer his technique questions, but I
that.
watched him do it, so.
Okay. And he's how old?
He's eight.
Ah,
Yes.
nice. Nice. They're always the best artists.
Well,
So
yeah.
you had an interesting copyright from the beginning?
I did. My copyright interest was not necessarily though fueled by art. My brother is a programmer, software programmer,
Okay.
and is an he's an app developer and has done all sorts of interesting things on the IT side. And that's when I got involved more in the helping him out in terms of making sure he copyrighted what he needed to copyright and wrote all the read his agreements to make sure that when he sold products, he was protecting himself. But the laws are the same for both computer programs and artwork. So,
And I assume music and
music, digital, like movies, DVDs. I have clients that do DVDs. I have one client who's a composer that has done all kinds of original arrangements for orchestras.
wow,
A lot of different clients when you work with copyrights.
yeah, absolutely. And my background with copyright is just as an illustrator, I had to know about copyright because when I sold use. I was selling usage. You know, I created an image and I was really just selling a right to use it on this or that. And I have all the original work. None of that changed hands. It was just that they were buying the rights to a specific part of the copyright. So I have a little bit of background because of that, but there are so many, like, it was complicated. The first time I tried to figure out how to register a copyright. So I'm glad you're going to walk us through that. But also, there's just so many like gray, shady sort of areas where it's like, what, how do I know for sure what I'm, you know, what I'm doing? So we'll get into some of that stuff as well. And especially today with everybody being online, I mean, all our work is just out there, you know?
It is. And we want it out there because that's how people get their work noticed by other people. And that's how many people make their living is by selling it online. So we want it to be out there, but there's things we can do to protect ourselves.
Well, to give us like the short list, what are the top three quick and easy things that you can do to protect yourself?
Well, as you mentioned, you can file that copyright. You can register your work with the U.S. Copyright Office. You can go in and file that formal application. It is online. Technically, anybody can go in and do it. You can also hire an attorney to do it for you, but it is online and accessible to anybody. You don't have to have any special access to get in there. And you have to be able to, in those, you upload a copy of the work, or if it's, say, a sculpture or something like that, you can upload a picture of it. But that's how you would get the copyright registered. Also, using contracts is a big deal. We all work with all kinds of vendors and contractors, and we have people that assist us. So having contracts defining who owns what and how, if we work together, who owns what out of that partnership. And even people who say help us and then see our work before we formally register it, it's still our work. So we need that non-compete, non-solicitation language in our contracts to protect ourselves as we're in the creative process. And then the other thing, put your name on it. That's the biggest.
Yeah, that's pretty simple.
That's the really simple thing to do, but not everybody does it or remembers to do it, especially when you're posting things online. Not just writing your name on the corner or whatever your mark is, but literally doing a copyright watermark or something like that, claiming that work was yours. Yes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and I know that when I sell an original to someone, not a gallery, not through a gallery, but if I sell it to an individual, I'll give them a receipt, and on the invoice at the bottom it says, you know, that the copyright is not transferred. Copyright remains with the artist, just so they know, you know. Yeah. In case they happen to be a shop owner and they decide that they're going to incorporate this image into their logo or, you know, whatever, right?
No, they need to come back to you for that permission. Definitely.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, but why do we really need that? I mean, why do we need to register it? Isn't it automatically our copyright when we make something? Isn't that the law that says that you're the copyright owner as soon as you make it?
There is something called common law copyright. So that's what you're referring to, is that it's understood that when you make it, you own it, bottom line. Right. However, by registering it, you not just say you own it and fall under that, but you also pick up all of the rights and penalties that are available if you have a formally registered copyright. So for instance, a common law trademark or a common law copyright violation, you may... you know, you're going to have to prove your damages. You're going to have to prove in court that you actually owned it, that you had it first. So you're going to have to go through all of this. You're not going to have this neat little piece of paper that you print out of the U.S. copyright that says, look, this is mine, and I registered it on June 26, 2018, and you didn't create yours until December 26, so this is mine, not yours. So there's that, but there's also the U.S. copyright law has the penalties, you know, anywhere from $200 to $150,000 for infringement on other people's copyrights. So by not registering, you're not allowing yourself to have that built-in protection as part of your work.
You mean if someone infringes on my copyright and they use it for a major ad campaign that's bringing in tons of money, I can't get any of that money if I haven't registered the copyright?
I don't want to say you can't, but
more difficult.
It would be much more difficult, and you'll have a much better chance of being successful and getting the maximum amount of money that you actually deserve. I mean, you've put in the work to create this imagery. If your copyright is registered.
So in a nutshell, what exactly is a copyright? Is there a short
definition? A copyright is the word we use to describe your ownership, your bundle of rights in a piece of your intellectual property. A copyright specifically relates to your artwork, photographs, music, performing arts, software, writing, books, those sorts of things.
Okay, so you said it's a bundle of rights.
It is a bundle of rights.
And like, how does that play out exactly? Is that too complicated?
No.
You weren't expecting that question.
I wasn't expecting it right then, but that's okay. There are lots of rights that go along with any piece. I mean, obviously you were talking about how you have at the bottom of your receipt. So that's the right to view and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the right to view and enjoy for public use or for private use. Those are two very different things, whether you're letting that happen. There's the right to reproduce, the right to distribute. Those are all additional rights and levels of the copyright that all go together before you sell anything.
So as an illustrator, I kind of remember I would be very specific about what is it that you need this for. You know, someone might use an image for the cover of a magazine. Someone else might want to use it for an editorial, educational, or whatever, completely different usages. And I could sell those separate, mm-hmm. right? And still own the copyright.
Yes.
So unless I signed off on the entire exclusive worldwide rights, then I'm pretty much handing over the copyright to someone else.
Right. But until you do that, you're able to sell bits and pieces.
Right.
You're able to sell the right to use it for specific purposes. And obviously how much you're going to charge for those specific purposes is going to vary based on the use. You're probably charging that magazine owner a lot more money than you're charging the teacher that wants to use
it. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. So again, just to be clear, when you sell an original painting, you still own the copyright in its entirety,
Yes.
You have nothing's passed hands in terms of the copyright reproduction rights.
Nothing has passed, although I would agree with you to have it in writing. As part of your receipt, to have something in there that says, you know, artist retains full copyright in the foregoing purchase and no right to, you know, distribute, reproduce, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is included in this purchase.
Yeah, because people just don't know that.
Yeah.
They think they own it. You know?
And then they think they own it and they go to reproduce it and you can say, look, it was right here on the receipt.
Right. And vice versa, the same is true. If they buy a copy of part of the right to reproduce something, that doesn't mean they get the original art.
No, it doesn't.
Original painting. Yeah.
Right.
So one of the things that comes up for us a lot, mm-hmm. as mixed media artists is that we do a lot of collage work and we find imagery and, you know, old drawings from the 1800s or new drawings. It's like, sometimes it's hard to know. Is it okay to use this? And like, how much can I use? And so I think this falls under the fair use doctrine, I think is what you called it, but I don't know what that means. Can you explain that?
So the fair use doctrine is part of the copyright law. It's part of the statute. And there's a ton of cases that go along with it. I'm going to read the basic elements because I want to make sure I get them correct. The courts look at four tests, I guess, to say whether or not a use of someone else's work is fair, meaning they're able to use, you know, I'm able to use a tiny piece of this magazine photo, or not fair, meaning I should be sued for using this piece of this photo. So it's purpose and character is one of them. So If you're borrowing someone's image for a primary educational purpose, it's much more likely that the courts are going to say that is a fair use.
Okay.
Whereas if it's for a commercial purpose, it's much more likely that it would be for an unfair use. Although I did read something recently that was very interesting in talking about commercial. It was saying that commercial is not just and not only the idea of selling the painting or selling the collage. That's probably even the selling of the collage is more in the middle. The more extreme commercial purpose that they're looking at is selling it. Say you make a small piece of a mixed media art and then you put it on a coffee mug and you sell 5,000 coffee mugs.
Okay.
That is your commercial
mass production.
Right there. Production is much more commercial than your one piece of art that you've sold to one person.
Okay.
So the more mass it is.
Right. Right. Yeah. So if you, as a fine artist, you make a painting and it has this little element in it, and then a publishing house contacts you and wants to license your paintings for giclées and reproductions, you've now moved a little closer to mass production.
Yes, you have.
Potentially needing to be really careful about what parts of the painting belong to someone else.
And it's at that point, you're still not stuck in hot water or unable to move forward. You can always request a license or request permission from the original owner of the work. That's always a backup if you've created this piece of mixed media art and now you've got this offer to do a mass distribution of it. You can always go back, and especially if you know the numbers involved, it might be worth it to purchase a license from artist A in order to sell your work to person B.
But if it's a really small part, do you need to do that?
Well, I mean, the amount is part of that fair use doctrine test. And they say that, you know, the smaller the amount, the more likely it is that it's just fair use. However, they use this word significant. Is it a significant part of the work?
Okay.
And again, the case law I read about this was saying, you know, you can have a huge painting and yet the heart of that painting might be this tiny little 2-inch square. And that's the significant part of the work, even though it's a 6x6 work. And if that's the only piece you're borrowing, then yes, you've taken the significant part.
Okay. But if it's like, if you squint your eyes and you can't even see it,
then that's not a significant part and it's going to fall onto fair use.
If it's part of the quiet conversation, you might be all right. We have this terminology we use.
There's more to it. One of it is nature of work, whether it's fact or fiction. That probably goes much more to photographs or data sets if you're publishing, if it's written works. But anything that's more fact is more likely to be fair use. The more fiction, the more creative it is. That is supposed to be more protected under the copyright.
The way I interpret that is like if I'm painting a scene of something really common, you know, the Statue of Liberty. I mean, a million people have painted it.
Yes.
You can't really...
You can't say you're violating a copyright owned by the U.S. government to paint the Statue of Liberty. Yes.
Right.
They also look at whether it's published or unpublished. So published work actually gets less protection under this doctrine because it's more out there to the public. Whereas unpublished work, the art you have sitting in your office or something that you haven't shared with anybody, if somebody borrows that, then that's much more of a violation than it is if it's something you've published in a magazine.
So published, now I remember there being some confusion around whether or not putting it on the internet makes it published.
I think that's still a debate, but I would think that if you've put it on the internet, say in a gallery of your work, it's published.
Oh my goodness.
But okay. I think if you're putting that gallery of your work out there and you're also including, of course, your copyright, you've already registered your copyright, you've already put your watermark on there, and you already have language on your page that says, you know, to use any part of, probably at the bottom in your footer or something, to use any part of the, you know, imagery on this page, please contact artist@123.com for permission. So once you've put all of that out there, yes, you've published your work, and that means that it's, you know, over here on this test, you know, where potentially it's fair use to use it. But if you put all in all of these other notifications to a potential borrower of it, you're telling them, no, you can't use my work. I've told you I've copyrighted it. I've put my name on it. I've watermarked it. I've put this notice on my website where you've gotten it. So no.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then market effect is actually the last one, whether or not it impacts the market for the artist's work. So if it,
So are we talking about, so explain that to me.
Okay.
I'm making an assumption here.
Again, my understanding of this is all from case law, and all of these fair use cases are very fact specific. So what you're thinking might be absolutely correct. But I think what I was hearing about, that one of the examples I read was about a fine artist who sells very high-end portraits and very high-end works, six-figure type paintings. And if somebody were to take those and reproduce them without permission and sell them for $10, that's going to have a huge impact on the value of this artist's work.
Yeah.
Whereas if, you know, somebody takes a little piece of it and sells it, but doesn't mass reproduce it, and also sells it for $100,000. That's not going to have as huge of a market impact. Does that? I used very extremes make it make sense, but yes,
it's almost like you're dragging down the value of something.
Right. You don't, the copier shouldn't be reducing the value of the original.
They should go for the $100,000 prints.
They should make $100,000 work, shouldn't we all?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Is that it for the fair
use? That's it for fair use.
It's crazy. And, you know, I've been hearing about these cases with, what do they call it? When they copy a piece of music, a little.
Oh, yeah.
I can think of what they
sampling.
Call it. Sampling. And I mean, I've heard these songs. I remember hearing this song and I was like, wait, that's the Beatles. And then it went into some other, like into a hip hop song. And I think there've been a lot of court cases about that. It can be just four notes, but it's like people know it immediately. Maybe that's another part of it. Like
that's part of that significant test. Right. If it's significant enough to identify the original, then yes, it's significant.
Yeah, right. Okay. So what I was assuming a minute ago with that last part of the doctrine, I thought what it meant, and my question to you is it copyright infringement if someone copies my style? Like, so I'm painting and you can recognize my paintings because I have this unique style, but someone else is, they're not copying the painting per se, but their style, like you would look at their work and think it was mine. That's so not fair. What about that?
It is not fair, but I don't think that that would be copyright infringement. That, of course, is something that could be argued, that somebody did infringe on your work and infringe on your style, particularly if you're both painting the same thing.
Well,
and you have the same style, but like you're both painting the tree outside in the yard and you're at two different angles of the tree and yet the paintings look exactly the same.
Well, since a lot of us are abstract artists, not all of us, but some, you know, most probably are. I mean, we could be talking about elements and shapes in the work and being put together almost identically. And, but still.
If it's not a copy, it's not considered copyright infringement. That doesn't mean that there's not issues there. It just means that it's not a copyright case.
So if you are an artist that sees something like that brewing, probably really important to be registering your copyright.
If that's something you see going on, if you see somebody else is using your style, I would be very, very diligent about registering my work on a very regular basis.
Yeah. So what is allowed? And I mean, how do we know? Because honestly, I mean, I think all of us, I know personally, I've used things. I'm like, I see something and I'm like, oh, I love the way that little shape looks. I'm going to incorporate that into my work. But shapes are not copyrightable, and right. Yeah. So it just becomes like the thing you said before, I guess, significant.
It's the significance and it's the quantity. It's how much are you using versus how little are you using? And I mean, it's a four-part test that has a lot of nuance in it. And yeah. It's hard because there are no, it's not black and white.
Right. Lots of gray.
There's a lot of gray on these. But it's also, you know, if you're making it just for you or just to sell to one person, then it's probably not as big of a concern. I'm not saying it's not a concern. It's not as big of a concern. Right. Versus if you know you're going to mass produce it or post it online or something like that, then you need to be a little bit more careful.
Yeah, we're all posting our work online. I mean, that's pretty much everybody in our academy. That's what we do. We share.
I will also add that if you're going to incorporate any trademarks, you need to be particularly careful on that, such as, the Coca-Cola logo is coming to mind, but I've run into this with artists before where they've done like sports team type memorabilia collage art, but those colleges can be, they are very strong defenders of their logo rights.
Now, wait a minute. What if I'm making a political statement with my work?
Ooh, that goes into free speech. you are allowed to make political statements with your work. But that's completely separate from fair use.
Okay.
Unless you're talking about, how are you trying to tie those together?
Well, like, I mean, I know there are editorial artists in the newspapers who do, like, maybe Nike just did something horrible and they do an editorial cartoon or something with a Nike swish, you know, dripping blood, or I don't know. I'm just making this up as I go, but it's more of a commentary almost.
It's a commentary. And at that point, the use of the swoosh is more of a free speech as opposed to a fair use doctrine, because they're not doing it for
monetary gain.
Artistic purposes. They're doing it for political commentary purposes.
Right. Right. Okay. Interesting. It is a fascinating subject, isn't it?
There are so many ways you can look at the subject, but yes.
Right. Yes. More interesting because it's not so cut and dry.
The cases are very interesting because you kind of don't know which way it's going to go. And you also, I mean, I know when I'm talking with clients about certain issues, I always have to say, I don't know if I'm going to be right.
Right.
You know, it's not like I can look up in the statute and give the answer and be 100% all of the time.
That's why they call it a practice, right?
Yeah, that is why they call it a practice.
Okay, so we have, let's see, we have a question. We have a couple of questions that are written in. And I think I'm going to go ahead and ask you them, and then we can take some live questions as well.
Okay.
One of them is, do you have any thoughts about the differences between U.S. copyright laws and the U.K., for example? We have members in our academy from all over the world, so this is, you know, important. Mm-hmm. Are there any reciprocal agreements, and which set of laws would apply for a European artist who sells in the U.S., for example? And I'm going to add to that, what about China? So,
go ahead. There are no reciprocal agreements. I'll start there. So you would need to, if you wanted to be as broadly protected as possible, you would actually need to register your copyright in all of those places.
So someone who lives in England can register their work in the United States?
Yes. So even if you live in England, even if you live in Canada, even if you live in Australia, you can still register your work in the United States. I generally recommend that my clients register their work, because this comes up with many of my clients. Either they live in another country or they do business in another country. I always recommend to register your work in the country first in the country you primarily do business in. So if the person in the question, you know, lives in the UK but primarily sells in the US market, I would recommend registering it here in the US. Whereas if they sell primarily in the UK, I would register in the UK. Sometimes it is it's economically a good idea to register both places, and sometimes it's not.
You can't register everywhere.
Right. I guess technically you can, but it would eventually be very cost prohibitive and time consuming, and that's not why you're an artist. So I would just recommend doing it in the country you do the most business in. And then if it's a particularly significant piece of work or something like a body of work or a series that's now being mass produced or something like that, then that's definitely worth copywriting in all of the jurisdictions it's being used in.
Hmm. Wow. That could be anywhere.
It could be, but the main ones, China.
Yeah. Okay. So the reason I brought up China is because, I'm pretty sure my work's been stolen and possibly even reproduced.
Mm-hmm.
What are their copyright laws? Do they even have copyright laws?
I don't know anything about China law.
Okay.
So, I would assume that they have copyright laws because all countries have copyright laws, but I don't know the contents of them. And I do know that just because you have a copyright here in the U.S. does not mean you are protected in China.
And it would be really difficult to hunt that off. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So one other question, and I can relate to this. We were talking earlier. I can relate to this question a little bit too. Julie Weaverling asked about copyright as it relates to photographing murals as part of a selected landscape. Are there any restrictions if the mural is the main element, but still only part of the overall photo, and the photo is then being offered for sale? So I did the mural, and a photographer comes along and is shooting a landscape with the building with the mural, which is a main part of it, but it is a landscape, and then they're selling those prints.
I would think there's a potential copyright violation in that.
Okay.
Simply because
the significance
of the work and part of the work. But then of course we do go into, is it, you know, for public consumption, and is that just, you know, does it, the art itself belong to the public? Did the artist sell public view?
Yeah, because if I'm taking pictures next to the sculpture, you know, some major town square, the artist made the sculpture. But if I sell photographs, I can sell photographs of the Eiffel Tower, right?
Yes, you can.
I have a beautiful sunset. The Eiffel Tower is the main thing. But, yeah, I don't know.
But then you also get to the common law copyright isn't good for 200 or 300 years. It's only good for, right, I think, 80 off the top of my head.
Okay.
So if that mural had been around for 80 years and is now the primary focus.
Okay, so say I'm a sculptor and I put up a big sculpture in the middle of town and it's brand spanking new, and someone takes a sunset photo with the sculpture being the main thing, but actually they could say it's sunset photo.
Right.
And selling them.
If I were the artist, I would argue that they're violating my copyright unless the ability to photograph was included in whatever bundle I sold to the town that's displaying the sculpture. Yeah.
So this bundle of copyrights, if I'm a sculptor, it's about reproducing the work as a photograph.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that could apply as a mural artist.
Yes.
Selling it as a photo is still part of the copyright.
Yes.
Wow.
Because it's a duplication of the image.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Wow.
But in terms of that mural, we were also talking about people using that as a backdrop for senior photos in a different example. And in that case, I don't think that it would necessarily be a violation because the focus and the significant piece of those photos is not the mural. It is, you know, the people that are in the photos.
Right. And Julie, that's what happened to me. And I actually, though, the photographer asked me, which was very nice, messaged me on Facebook and said, I'm doing senior portraits. Would it be okay if I did it in front of your mural? And I was like, please do.
And asking is always the right course of action if you can. And largely because a lot of people are going to act like you did and probably say yes, especially if it's a mural that's in public or a sculpture that's in the middle of a park. You might have wanted credit if those photos were published, right. But that would be fair, I would think.
Yeah, yeah.
Photographs by John Smith and mural by Susan Milrath. Right, see?
Exactly. Yeah. That's definitely okay with me. Yeah. I think that was all of the questions. Oh, well, so we have some more questions that you and I talked about. Like, so you're going to provide a PDF to everyone that kind of takes you step by step through this process of how to register a copyright.
Yes.
Did you want to talk about it at all now?
We can go over the basics of it.
Because I remember, tell me if this is right, I made it an annual practice. At the end of 2017, I would just look at all my work and I would register in bulk. These were two 2017 paintings, and then there were 2018 paintings. And so simple, it's done once a year. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Set aside a day to do it. Make sure you have your either photographs or scans of the work that you're going to register and just sit down and do it. As I said, you go online, it's copyright.gov. You don't need to write down the website. It's all in the PDF that we're handing out. They do make you set up an account. It's free. You don't need anything special to set it up. And then you just simply go in and you click on start new application. You click the type of work that you're registering it. And then you enter in the names of your work. And then you go through, I mean, there's multiple screens. So it is, it's a little overwhelming because there are so many screens, but it's all information you should know. Like, what's your name?
Right.
Your address.
The one thing I remember not being sure about was is this published or not unpublished work? Because they're on my website, like I said, but mm-hmm. they're not in a book. So I wasn't quite sure.
I would lean that if you've exposed them to the public, which your website is exposed to the public, that they are published.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Whereas if they're hanging only in your studio, then they are unpublished.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, and also Kathy's going to be available, everybody, so you know, on the forum for the next, you know, little while. So if you have follow-up questions, you can ask there. One other thing, what's a license?
A license is a way you can either buy or sell the use of the copyright. So a license document is a contract. It's an agreement. You can either purchase it. So in the case of that sports memorabilia, you can purchase a license from a college, and that license will give you permission to use that sports logo in your collage art. Or you can sell a license. So you can sell.
Why is it called a license and not just a part of the bundle of copyrights?
Because it is.
That's fine. That's good enough.
Because the license usually has more parts to the agreement rather than just a copyright release. It's a license isn't just a one paragraph saying, you know, print right release. You have the right to print, duplicate, yada, yada, yada for personal.
It's more specific.
A license is much broader. It covers many more situations. It talks about who owns the property. It identifies any registrations. Licenses also get much more into the numbers. So licenses can talk about how much you're going to be paid for every use of it, or how many times you're allowed to use it, or they can say it's a flat fee license where you have to pay so much per year in order to continue to use it. A one-time license, it will go into all of those details. There usually is also some non-compete, non-solicitation type language saying, you know, you can't recreate our work and sell it as your own, essentially.
Okay. So when I worked with a poster distributor, a company mm-hmm. publishes fine art prints and posters, right? That was a licensing agreement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably.
It was like 10%, something like that. I got 10% of the sales or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was quite a detailed contract. So if I'm approached by a company like that, and I don't really know if their contract looks good or not, I could come to you and have you review it.
Yes.
That's nice to be able to do that.
Yes. Okay. And licensing is actually a big place for people who want to have that commercial avenue for some of their artwork. There's a lot of big organizations that are actually out there that will connect artists and manufacturers, because manufacturers want unique ideas and artists like to create them.
And I'm not above selling my work for whatever, shower curtains. Yeah. Look, that royalty check coming in is not too bad. Not too bad. Okay, so the benefit of using a licensing agreement is just so that you have it all spelled out.
You're protected. No matter which side of the license you're on, you're protected. And that's the real benefit of it. You know, if you're the one acquiring the license, by having that license agreement, you really do have spelled out what you can use, what you can do and what you can't do. So you can't later be sued for copyright infringement.
I mean, I remember mine was even like, you could check things off on this agreement, and I was able to decide if they would be allowed to, finish the work in a different finish,
like
with a high gloss finish or whatever, you know, crazy different things. And I was like, no, that's just going to make it look cheesy. And so I want some control over it. But yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So it's one of those things. It's a good idea because it not only allows, it's the vehicle you can use to monetize your work, and it does allow you to be protected while you do it.
Right, exactly. And yeah, and have some control over the final imagery.
Right.
Wow, that's fascinating. I think we've covered everything. I mean, there's so many steps in the copyright registration, but they're all in the PDF. So
yes.
Do you have anything else you wanted to add before we take live questions?
I don't think I have anything off the top of my head, but I'm happy to answer whatever questions people have.
Okay, great. Do we have any questions, Brandon?
We do. And I just wanted to remind everyone, if you do have a question, if you could, please, please, please raise your hand. And I'll definitely, if we have time, I will call on you. So the first question is going to be from Valerie. Valerie, does not look like you have an updated version of Zoom. That is okay. I will read Valerie's question. Valerie wants to know, what about images used in a collage? All these images were created by people like wrapping paper, images from Instagram, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I have bought, you know, patterns, papers, and put them into my work. I think we already talked about that, though, right?
Yeah.
It's on the significance.
It has to do with the significance, the quantity that you're using. And honestly, what you're using it for, you know, what the ultimate, how you're ultimately selling it or offering it to the public.
So most of us are making fine art that we hope will be sold in a gallery or an online gallery, that kind of thing. And so is there any like formula proportionately, like this portion of the work can't be more than half of the work, or it can't be more than a third?
I mean... there is no formula in the case law. I can tell you that. I have heard people say to the 10% rule, but again, you get back to that significance question where, you know, is the 10% you're using the most significant part of the work or not? So less is more in terms of infringement and just.
And if I took a brightly colored, and I guess the flag is completely different, probably.
Yeah, the flag's different.
So, but if I took a pattern that's really common and you see places, and I change the colors of it, and I cut it apart, and I put it in my painting, and now it went from wrapping paper to a fine art painting. It's not even the same.
Yeah. I think you would be safer in that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, again, under the fair use doctrine, there's no 100% black and white answer.
Right. There are, however, copyright-free images.
There are copyright-free images out there, yes.
And you're going to...
And if they're old, they're outside of... I think it's 80 years, but I'll have to double-check that.
Yeah, okay. All right. Brandon, we'll take some more questions. And let me just remind everybody, we don't have a whole lot of time, and we got a lot of feedback on our survey thing. Don't go on and on and on in the question and answer. So let's keep our questions relevant and see how many we can get answered.
All right. So the next question is from, let's see, Lori. Lori, I'm going to allow you to talk here. If you click on that icon, you should be able to talk to us.
Her, she's still
muted.
Cheryl, it might be because you were host here. Let's see.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you are, Lori. Okay.
It froze up. I'm so sorry. So really quickly, I find this all very confusing. But Susan, you take your paintings at the end of a year and you copyright them. So I have a couple questions. So how much does that cost? What about paintings from prior years if we haven't been doing this? And then should we really also be putting a watermark on our like paintings on our websites and stuff? Because I know some people say then they don't sell as well. And
Right. Well, so I'll tell you what I do, and then Kathy, you say, tell me if that makes sense. What I did when I started copywriting was I started in 2012, and I did that year's work as a batch. I also did another batch that was anything prior, like one big batch of older work, and I named it something, and I don't remember what I named it. But then in the years after that, every year I would do 2013, 2014 body of work or whatever. And it was only 40 something maybe to do the whole batch, if I remember correctly. And watermarking is a really personal thing. I'm sure Kathy would say, yes, the more protection you put on your work, the better. But a lot of us don't want to do that because it's kind of ugly and it's, I don't know. You know, there are some things you can do in the metadata of your photos, though, I think, when you put them online, but I'm not really sure how you do that. But, you know, if it's in every title, if the title says, you know, on your images on your website, if it's the title, the size, copyright with your name, that helps. Okay. I mean, so I think it's layers of protection. Am I right, Kathy?
Yes, layers of protection.
So I could go now then and sort of look at my older work from before 2018 and do a batch copyright of, you know, first works or something like that. Just you give it a name, and then it's cheaper than doing one by one.
Oh yeah.
Yes. It's much cheaper to batch copyright.
Okay. So I can do that now with older stuff.
Yes.
And then I'm hearing you say like on the description, I could put like a little copyright thing.
Okay. You should be able to, in your description of each work, put a copyright statement, and it doesn't even have to be a complex copyright, just copyright your name and the year. And in terms of the watermark, I know watermarks are very personal, and you don't have to have one of those big ugly ones that's right in the middle. You could even have a tiny little one at the bottom that has the copyright statement as part of your okay. watermark. You just want it
that's
in there.
Tiny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tiny that's is fine. It just has to be, it doesn't have to be there, but the more copyright notification you have there, the more protected you are.
Okay. And then I'm sorry, just to go back then on each picture on the website, there needs to be a little copyright thing on each picture.
Well, again, it's layers, Lori. I mean, that's what I've been doing, but you know, and you can, you can also do the whole website, like Kathy said, a tagline on every page. Yeah,
I have that. And then I do have one other quick question. So, do you know Blue Dogs by Rodrigo? So there's this artist and he does these paintings and they're called Blue Dogs and they're known, like people know it's a blue dog. It's by this guy named Rodrigo, who's dead now. But my husband paints his own variations of those blue dogs, never copying them, but kind of the same dog, but in a different situation. So he's only done those and given those away. He's never sold them. But if I'm understanding correctly, if he sold them, there could be a problem because it is such a sort of known, like, this guy does Blue Dogs. These are his. People who know him know it.
There is a potential that it could be a problem. I mean, he didn't exactly copy, so I wouldn't say that it is a problem because he didn't exactly copy, so he's not copyright infringing. Yeah. It goes back to that question about style, honestly, where people are doing the same style. But again, it also looks at, you know, is this mass production or is this, you know, single sale, single point of sale? Okay. There's
selling
different
one by one, and not selling prints or. Okay. I don't want to take up other time. So thank you, Lori.
Thanks. Hope that helps.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Lori. So we've got a question here from Christine. Christine, if you just click on the icon, you should be able to talk to us here. Perfect.
Hi.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Christine.
Hi. So quick question. I actually had someone kind of doing some of the legwork on this for me a while ago, and she got to the point in the form where you were supposed to put in your the address.
Okay.
And my studio's at home. I don't have any other addresses to give. And she said this all of this information will be publicly available.
You mean on the copyright, right? Yeah. In the Library of Congress.
Yeah. And I just wasn't super comfortable. I said, like, how publicly available? She said, well, I mean, it's just like anyone who wants to access the copyright can access that information. So I that's where I kind of like, I asked kind of my posse, you know, do any of you do the copyright? And they're like, oh, no, I've never done it. It's too much work. It's too expensive. It's never been a problem, blah, blah, blah.
Never been a problem. So it's a problem, right?
Well, exactly. I mean, I actually have had somebody use one of my images for MP3 art, but as soon as I...
Wow.
Contacted them. It wasn't like it was just for an MP3. So it was just an image online. I did the reverse Google image search.
Yeah, but that can be, I mean, that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
It is.
Well, so it does happen. I contacted the artist and within minutes she said, oh my God, I had, you know, somebody else picked this out for me. I had no idea. I'm so sorry. Right. And it was gone, you know? But anyway, so back to the question of having my home address available.
The application requires that you use an address. It doesn't necessarily require that you use your home address. It requires that you use an address where you can receive mail. So this is where, I know for some of my clients, I use my PO box as the address on their copyright because they don't want their home address out there. Other people have their own PO box for that very purpose because they don't want their address out there. It could also be if you have a friend or someone you know that's a business owner that wouldn't mind you using their address. That's always a possibility. But you do have to have an address. So just someplace where you know you could receive mail at.
Oh, I see. So just ask around.
There's lots of ideas of who you could ask. I mean, you, as I said, you may have a friend that owns a store in town. You might have, you might even have a friend that already uses a PO box and wouldn't mind having your because the frequency with which you're going to receive mail to that address is very slim to none. Usually when people are contacted about using the copyright, they're going to call you or they're going to email you. They may send you a letter, but they're not going to email you.
But I did get a form from the Library of Congress saying, here's your information, sort of.
Right.
Copyright.
Right.
So they do need a place to send that.
Yeah, so it does need to be somewhere where the mail is actually checked versus just like opening up a PO box that I'm never going to go to.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
All right. So next we have, let's see, Betsy. So Betsy, I'm just going to unmute you here. You click on that icon, you should be able to talk to us. Perfect.
Yep. Great. Hi. Can you hear me, Susan?
Yeah. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. I have two very quick questions. What about Instagram? I don't have a website yet, but I do have an Instagram that's just art. Does that count as publishing?
Yes, it does.
Oh, I was supposed to say that.
But the same rules apply to Instagram as would apply to your website. So you can post it to Instagram, and then in your word count part of your Instagram, put your copyright notice.
Okay. I actually did at the top of my page say that I held the copyright to everything, but should I do that with each image?
To be safe, I would do it with each image. Okay. But layers if you already have it at the top of your page, then you've at least done that big huge step. You're putting everybody on notice that it's yours and it belongs to you.
Okay. This is an off the wall question really for Susan. I think a lot of us come out of CVP as sort of mini Nicks.
Okay, right.
And you had a question about copying someone's style, and I think some of us, to a certain degree, for a while anyway, mm-hmm. produce paintings that are in Nick's style. So I just wanted to ask about that.
Yeah, and Nick would say that's normal.
To
be influenced like that, but that is why he's so, talks so much about you being more you, right, and bringing your own unique and originality to your work and to make it more authentic. I mean, we spent 12 weeks dealing with broad concepts, and it's really hard to be dealing with learning these broad concepts and also finding your own unique vocabulary at the same time, right? So it's a lot. And if you, so expect there to be some influence, but you're going to take this and make it your own. And again, as Kathy said, you can't copyright a style.
Right.
That's on one end of it. But we don't want to be Nick either. We want you to be you. And
I just wondered about the art world, whether the art world was prepared for a lot of sort of a la Nick Wilton. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that won't be the case.
No, I think obviously we all move forward. And into our own thing. Anyway, that's all I had to ask. So thank you. This was really helpful. Lizzie.
And I'm adding my copyright to my Instagram page as we talk.
Thanks, Kathy, very much.
You're welcome.
All right. So next we have Janet. Janet, if you just click on that icon, you should be able to talk to us.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Janet.
Hi, Janet.
Hey. Basic question. Doing CVP was the first time I did collage. And I have used images that I've taken off Pinterest, basically figurative work, more like photographs, but I've so changed them. I was just wondering, I'll flip them, mirror them, and I'll paint over them. So I didn't know, am I still worried because I took those images off Pinterest?
There's clearly still a potential for the copyright violation because you didn't ask permission of the original artist. However, given that you've changed it so dramatically, I think you probably are in the safety zone.
Okay, because I feel that when I go to larger work, I would probably paint the images, not use collage necessarily. But I was just getting a little nervous because I am going off into like a new series and hoping to use some of the images I've just started working with. And okay, thank you. That helps me feel more secure.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah,
okay.
All right, let's see. We have a raised hand here from Marka, I believe. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that here. Going to unmute you here. If you just click on the icon, you should be able to talk to us. Perfect.
Hi.
Hi.
It's actually Marcia.
I've been saying Marka for months.
I know, nobody gets it. My next question was gonna be, should I change my name? I was wondering, I'm so new to all of this, and so it's like, Susan, you have these huge batches that you can do at once. For somebody like me, I'm struggling just to get one painting finished at a time. And so I was just wondering, how do you do that? If you're posting just kind of individually every now and then, it sounds like it would be expensive to register everything
well, no, you
individually.
You don't have to do it as you post. you can still, like, over the course of the year, you know, 2018, for example, surely you've finished a handful of paintings, right?
I wouldn't say a handful. I'm just beginning. Maybe. So, yeah. I have, like, 30 paintings that I'm, you know, working on, but nothing's, like, finished yet.
So when they're finished, you know, I mean, give yourself a year. And, I mean, if you've only finished two, maybe just hold off and wait until you have 10. But no matter how many, am I right, Kathy? No matter how many, a batch is going to be about $40. Is that what
you're saying? I'm thinking it's about 50 now, but yes.
Okay.
But yes, I would say it's definitely worth it. And even if you are only doing five in your batch, it's probably worth it. You may also want to look at the whole cost benefit analysis of what you're doing with those paintings and how you're selling them and how you're marketing them before you invest in additional copyrights. And because for some people, it might be worth it to you know, copyright each individual painting out of a series, right. But that's if they're being reproduced or things like that.
Right. Yeah. Like if I had a company interested in licensing an image and I hadn't yet copyrighted it, I would go do that immediately just for that one image, just to make sure it's covered. Yeah.
Now, Susan, it sounds like you're waiting till like the end of the year to do the big batch.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering about that. If you're posting all this stuff on your website prior to the end of the year, copywriting it, is that something you are concerned about?
Yeah, good question. Should I be, Kathy?
Well, it sounds like you're using all of the other common law protections. Remember, we talked about the difference between the common law and the registered copyright. So if you are putting those images on your website and you're using all the common law protections, you're putting the copyright notice, you're making sure your name's on there, you're making sure there's a notice on your website that says that you're copyrighting these and these are yours. You've put everybody on notice. And that strengthens your argument if someone is to borrow it before you formally register it, that you did in fact say, I own this and I'm claiming a copyright in it.
Okay. Is that the list of things you do for the common law notice? Is that something maybe that's going to be on the PDF that you're...
I don't think it is, but... I don't think it is, but basically what we're saying is you own your copyright when you make your work, and the more things you do to make that known that you're claiming your copyright, the better. So it could be, you know, it could be in the copy on your Instagram page, it could be on your Facebook page, it could be on your website, it can be under each image title. It could be it could be part of the file name, maybe. I don't even know. I don't know if it can be part of the metadata of the photo image. But yeah, I mean, and I do rely on that until the end of the year when I've got my batch all registered.
I see. And so like when we are posting on the community Facebook page and that sort of thing, is that something people copyright theirs? You know, because we're always like uploading stuff onto that.
We have a group Facebook page, Kathy, and we share our work all the time. And I mean, that is what we do. I mean, I'm constantly, if I got a new painting, I post it, right? I put it on my Instagram page, I put it on Facebook.
Do you have terms of use for your Facebook group that put it out there that you all agree not to copy each other's work?
I think that's understood. I don't know that it's in writing.
Because a lot of more like mastermind groups definitely have confidentiality policies and non-disclosure policies that, you know, if you go post on this group, you know, something personal about your business or something going on, that people in the Facebook group are not supposed to be then going to talk about it somewhere else. And I would think the same concept would apply to a group like this where, you know, you all would want to have a understood group of policies that you're not going to steal from each other.
And again, didn't we already just sign everything over to Facebook just by merely by posting on it?
Yes and no.
Okay. So yeah, there's a little bit of the Wild West on the internet, I guess.
Yeah,
that's what I was wondering, because I remember I just saw something on the Academy. Nick was interviewing Sidwell, Melissa is her name, yeah. But anyway, and she was saying, you know, she's on like Instagram, Facebook, Flickr, Pinterest, so all of those things you would be trying to somehow get a copyright.
A little copyright notice is not a bad idea. Yeah.
Mm-mm. Okay. Yeah, and Pinterest, is that something that can be done on Pinterest?
Yes.
Okay.
I would think.
Yeah, probably. I don't know where, yeah, if there's a place in your profile that you can post that, maybe Cheryl knows. But, I mean, the whole point of it is sharing, right? People grabbing things, they're grabbing your art and putting it in their, on their board. And, I mean, that's kind of what it's about. But, yeah, not a bad idea to have that little copyright tagline on each image, right? So that means wherever that somebody grabs it and puts it on their board, that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. I see. Well, thank you so much. This is fascinating. Obviously, yeah, there's a lot of research to be done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You just do what you can, yeah, Mark. Yeah. And thank you for correcting me on
thank
that.
You.
And we have a write-in question. I'm going to ask for Ellen because she's watching her grandson right now. But she says she took an ad, I think an ad in a magazine, of a photograph of a girl blowing a bubble. And she made 20 photocopies of it and glued them to 12 by 12 panels and painted over them, but kept the image there. They're all different colors and changed them slightly. I think I know the answer, but would that be infringing on the copyright?
I think it would be definitely leaning towards infringing and not meeting the fair use standard.
Yeah.
If that's something she's really wanting to sell or display, I would definitely encourage her to contact you said it was an advertisement in a magazine?
It was an ad, yeah.
I would definitely encourage her to contact the owner of the ad, of whatever the product was, for permission to use it.
Right. Makes sense. Brandon?
Yes. Do we have time for a few more questions?
Up to you, Kathy. How are you doing?
Yeah, two or three more.
Okay. Let's see. We have Diane next. So I'm just going to unmute you, Diane. If you click on that icon, you should be able to talk to us. Perfect.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi, Diane.
I can. Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. This is a fascinating topic. I'm so glad you're covering this.
Me too.
So I want to go back to collage stuff just for a second.
Yeah.
If you have a book that's really old, like prior to 1923 is my understanding, you can use that book, no problem. You can make photocopies of it and use it in your art.
Yes.
If it's a book that's not that old and you use it in your art, but you're using the original book page, not a photocopy of the book page, is that copyright infringement?
Yes, I believe it would still be copyright infringement, depending upon, well, I mean, then you get to the fair use, because if you're using just a tiny piece of one page of the book, you're probably, you know, you're in the gray area still, but you're in the clear gray area.
Yeah, because I'm thinking if it's a text page, mm-hmm. turning it into a visual thing, we're not competing in the literary sense. We're, you know, right? So you're completely changing what it was intended for.
Okay, so if you took a piece of some literature that's not prior to 1923, and you use certain words that are stringed together in a specific way, and you insert that into your collage, granted it's going to be pretty small, so it's not going to be significant.
Right.
What's your take on that?
You probably would be okay.
Okay.
Again, a lot of these things, they're not black and white. They're not yes and no, but obviously the smaller amount you use, the better. You just want to look at what you're doing to it and whether you're going to have an impact on the market for that book. And then, of course, the transformative question. Did you change it significantly?
Yeah. Okay. Wow. And does that apply to art books as well? I mean, if I have art from a book that's published before 1923, I'm assuming that's okay to use. But there is also art books that have published art from museums where it is in the public domain. can I use those images out of those art books if they're not prior to 1923?
You're talking about images of famous works of art?
Yeah. And I wouldn't be using it in a very large way. It would be more just to, you know, in smallish ways. But I'm just curious about that.
What do you think, Kathy?
That's a tough one.
It's going to depend on the significance. Like if you take a Banksy, or not, oh, that's not a good example, but like a famous contemporary painter, take some of their work and put it into your work,
mm-hmm.
And it's really well known, and it's like people know it, and that person's still alive, and this is in the last 20 years, mm-hmm. It's going to depend on how much significance in your new piece that has, right?
Right. Yeah. So for instance, if you're working on like a 3 by 3 foot or 4 by 4, you know, a larger piece, and you're using like a 2 by 2 piece of someone else's art.
That's a big piece.
That's a big chunk.
A 2 inch by 2 inch?
Oh, I thought you meant...
We thought you meant 2 feet by 2 feet.
No, yeah, I meant your piece is 4 foot by 4 feet, but you use a piece of collage in it that's maybe 3 inches by 4 inches or something.
Well, Kathy gave the example earlier, though. If your whole piece is just a blank white canvas and that 2 inch thing that you put on it is the only thing you can see, right? So this is why it's so gray.
Right. Okay. But yeah. if you painted around it and you really had to get up close, it was part of that quiet conversation and you had to really look to find it, it wouldn't be a problem?
You'd be more likely for it to not be a problem. If it's something you're significantly concerned about, that might be before you publish it to anybody or before, I mean, if you're, you can always create it just for yourself, number one.
Right.
But before you were to sell it or distribute it to anybody else, that might be something where you want to actually review the piece with a copyright lawyer. If you're concerned that you did violate some copyrights.
Okay.
Kind of go over that. It depends on what you're planning on doing with the piece and whether or not it's again, that cost benefit, is it worth the cost to have that consultation?
So then my next question would be, I've never done this, but how likely would it be to go to a book publisher who has the copyright for this image that they had in their book that they published? How likely is it for them to allow an artist to use that? And, you know, have you had any experiences with that?
I don't know that I've worked with book publishers. I would say that most of the people I've worked with that have requested permission to use copyrights find a way to get permission to use what they want. They might be limited in what they're able to do, but they do. Usually people seem to be pretty generous with one another.
Okay, great. And so back to something that occurred to me when I think it was Lori was talking about the blue dog paintings that her husband does. So if someone felt that they were copy, you know, if it was an infringement and he's giving them to people, but those people then turn around and sell them or mass produce them, is he still liable?
I don't believe he is.
Okay.
Interesting question.
Yeah. But that, you know, that probably is up for all kinds of
because
interpretation.
He did it just for himself and then somebody took his image and
we're
band of thieves.
we're all allowed to sit around and make copies of other people's stuff for our own. Like you can paint a Mona Lisa for yourself and hang it in your house. But when you try and sell it, that's when you've committed the infringement.
And so whoever is collecting the money, whoever making money on it, that's the person who's infringed on the copyright.
I see. Okay.
Great.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Diane. And by the way, Kathy, I make it a habit of putting copyright in my name on the back of all my paintings also, so that, you know, even if somebody doesn't see the receipt that says, you know, that I retain the copyright, it's on the mm-hmm. painting itself. So even if the painting sells.
I think that's a good idea. I know artwork I've purchased has also included like an actual like a 3x5 size printout with the artist's name and the copyright, usually what I'm allowed to do with it, and even sometimes their contact information. And that's, I always looked at it more as a, oh, I really like this painting and I want another one in the style. And now I have his website and phone number on the back of his painting to go find it when I'm ready. So it was like not just the copyright information, but practically advertising himself for additional sales.
And if I do all this work and I register my work in the United States and I sell to someone in another country, Canada, for example, is my copyright, it's valid in the United States, but is it valid right. in Canada?
I mean, it is still valid, but it's not recognized. It's not a Canadian copyright. So if you want your true registered copyright to be recognized in Canada, you do need to register that. However, the concept of common law copyright does flow through to Canada and the UK and pretty much.
So if someone bought my painting, some horrible Canadian bought my painting and then went out and made copies and reproduced it and sold them, I would have to fight it in Canada courts probably, but I would have documentation that I did register it in the United States and I am not happy about this and blah, blah, blah.
If his actions all occurred in Canada, yes, you'd have to sue him in Canada courts. But particularly if he had that copyright notice on the back of your painting and you could show you had registered it here in the States, he would have been under notice that you claimed the copyright in that work.
Right. Got it. Okay, Brandon, back to you.
So we're still okay to do maybe one more question right now, Kathy?
Yeah, about one more.
Okay. So let's see the next hand. It's not a name. GKL is the beginning. I'm going to unmute you here. If you click on that icon, you should be able to talk to us. There you go. Can you hear us?
Yeah, but it's not me. It came up on my screen. I did have a question, but it's not me. I'm Lisa Bebby.
Okay. Hi, Lisa. Oh,
I see why. That was my my coat. Okay. I have a question. So a lot of my work has been on from my family album where I've taken black and whites, made photocopies of them, put in my work, and say it's of my dad, I put a cone hat on them or put them in some kind of ridiculous narrative thing. And that's fine. But I'm kind of running out of stuff. So I was wondering if number one, if I did a search for images, say vintage women eating ice cream cones, and I found some, but they're not, I don't know where they came from, or and I used them, is that, I don't even know how to go around that. Do you have any suggestions?
So you found them on the internet?
Yeah, you know, I put in a search for like vintage,
like stock photos,
right?
No, not stock photos, because I know that just people put their images, or I don't know where they come from. If you search for people eating ice cream, for instance, especially vintage ones, you get these black and white, like, you know, I don't know, weird pictures. I don't know where they come from because there's no reference.
This is very common, Kathy. We go out and search for images like that we want to incorporate into a painting. So how do we research to find out if these are...
Well, I guess I would start with who posted them on the internet and how they got there and if there's any copyright claimed in the photo that's posted on the internet, because if a photo has been posted out there, but the person who posted the photo isn't claiming that it's protected, then you're leaning towards being in the clear. But I would definitely want to look at where the photo came from and just have a good grasp on that before I used it.
Okay. I have one other little question is I teach and often I like to use images that I get off the internet that don't look like they're protected. And I was wondering, is there sort of a lenient rule towards education?
There is. Part of that fair use doctrine talks about education or commercial. Mm-hmm. So images that you've taken from the internet that may actually be copyrighted that you're using solely in a classroom setting, you're in the clear on that.
And I've had people ask even for that purpose, and it's very kind of them to ask and ask permission.
Yeah.
Okay, Celia?
Yeah. That's it for me.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you.
I guess that's all we have time for. We are running up against the half hour here, and you have things to do. Let me see. We have one last raised hand.
Okay.
I think wants to do one last one. I'm not sure who that is.
Celia, we have one last question here. So Celia, if I just unmute you here, you click on that icon, you should be able to talk to us. Perfect.
Oh, I thought we just talked to Celia.
Hey, no, hi.
Hi, Celia.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Kathy. Quick question. I have a little website, and what I've written on it is copyright always. Is that too lame? It's on my homepage. And I'm wondering, I just kind of wrote that like when I built the website maybe 5 or 6 years ago and just let it coast. But is that sufficient?
I mean, I think to be technically correct, you do have to have the copyright, the year, and your name. You definitely have put people on notice that you are intending to hold a copyright. So there's, you know, always that common law argument, but the more correct you are in the format, the more protected you are.
So are you saying then, Kathy, that register the copyright and then have the line say the year? Okay. You're just saying all images copyright, Celia. What should the line say exactly?
I would put copyright 2018, Kathy Davis. And then for your images that you post, you do not need to go back in your images you posted last year and change them to this year. But if you're posting them this year, copyright 2018, next year, copyright 2019.
Okay, so this is my homepage of my website, which has my name clearly on it. Is it good enough or enough down at the bottom in the footer, which is like 6-point type? Is it good enough for it to just say copyright 2018 Celia Johnson?
Yes. It just has to be on there.
Protocol. Okay. Okay. Thank you. And I had another question, but I've lost the thought, and I know you're trying to get out. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, Celia. And again, Kathy will be checking out the questions coming in on the forum. So if you guys, if you remember later and you want to write in the question there, you can do that.
All right.
Thank you so much. This is like super helpful, and it's frustrating that there isn't like a formula that we can like put the painting up and say, is this good? You know, but I think I know for me, when I want patterns to be in, you know, collage patterns and stuff, I'm just making them now. You know, I paint myself and try to get the different colors and feeling that I want. And then I know I'm good.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can always ask permission.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm flattered if somebody asks me.
Yeah.
Unless they want to, you know, reproduce it and make tons of money that I don't get a piece of. Yeah.
Well, yeah, if they're going to do that, you want the money.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Thank you again, Kathy. And all of you who are listening, Kathy's information is going to be on the PDF that we're sharing, as well as, I think, on the forum post as well. So if you want somebody to review a contract or, you know, look at a licensing agreement, that kind of thing. And I think she has a special offer on there for you as well. So check out that PDF, and great to have you as a resource, Kathy. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for asking me. This was fun to talk to all of you.
All right.
I'll talk to you later in the forum.
Okay. Sounds good. See you there.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.